on the logical complexity of tiny heat engines and whether they can really be reversible. So the work I'm presenting now is mainly 6 years old, partly even 11 years old, but there's also some quite recent work, but I will only sketch it. Okay, so the question for you maybe is this talk about quantum thermodynamics at all? So it definitely will be about thermodynamics, but quantum superposition won't be relevant. So quantum is only in the sense of discrete energy levels. I will tell you two motivations why I started to think about quantum heat engines in 1999. First of all, I just wanted to understand thermodynamics, and I found two qubits easier to understand than steam engines. And second reason was that I was working in the computer science department, and I planned to teach thermodynamics to students of computer science. So my paper about heat engines was basically appeared when I was starting to write up my lecture notes. This talk will be quite far from applications. It's more like a game that teaches thermodynamics. And the nice thing is that it's a game with simple rules, but challenging questions. Sorry, do you hear me? Because I don't have any feedback. Yes? Okay, thanks. Yeah. Okay, first of all, I should introduce the concept of unitary work extraction by Alaverdian, Balian, Nievenhuysen. 2004. I hope it's the correct reference, yes, but these are the right people, definitely. Given a quantum system with state rho and Hamiltonian H, a unitary extract the work trace of rho H minus trace of U rho U dagger H. So very simple, just the difference of the average energy, and the work extraction is optimal if it just maximizes the extracted work. There's a very interesting, there's a very interesting result that is a little bit older about passive systems and Gibbs equilibrium, which is related to this work extraction. A state rho is called passive if no unitary can extract energy. And there's a very simple criterion when this is the case. It just means that the state is diagonal in the energy basis and that the eigenvalues are ordered according to the energy. And then there's the more interesting and less trivial concept of completely passive. The state is called completely passive is even if n copies of it are still passive for all n. And there's a nice result saying that rho is a Gibbs state to some temperature T if and only if it's completely passive. So you can't necessarily extract work from a non-equilibrium state if you have only a simple copy, but you always can extract work from a non-equilibrium state if you have sufficiently many copies. And the difference between passive and completely passive will play a crucial role in this talk, because the complexity of heat engines is exactly about this difference, or it stems from this difference. So we will start with the following toy model of molecular heat engines. We have two quantum systems, a cold and a hot reservoir, just let's say finite dimensional for the moment. And then a heat engine is just a unitary that extracts work. This is not always possible because of the difference between passive and completely passive. One can easily show, I will show you examples later, that the joint system of this hot and cold system can be passive, but it can never be completely passive. For the simple reason that the composition of two systems with different temperatures can never be a Gibbs state. So the optimal heat engine is also a term that will play a crucial role. It's the unitary that maximizes the work. And I should mention that many quantum heat engines have been constructed meanwhile, but in this talk I focus on the relation to computation. So for this reason I won't mention all this work that has been done meanwhile. So the simplest heat engine. There's a question, okay? Yes. Yes, yes, you can look at it this way, that also my reservoirs are microscopic. So I want to understand everything on the level, even the reference reservoir. So you can say in my setting, the cold two-level system here is the reservoir, and the hot one is a resource. So the cold two-level system can be considered as the environment. It's taken from the environment, and the hot one is a resource. Does this answer your question? Yes, but I think your question is closely connected to a framework that I will show later. This is fine. So for the moment, we just have this. We just have these two level systems with different energy gaps. And then one can easily see that at the moment, if this condition is met, then the state 1,0 is more likely than 0,1, although its energy is larger. So the swap releases some energy. Okay, so far, not a big story. But this already shows that whether or not the heat engine exists depends on the energy level structure of both systems and their temperature ratio. To make that clearer, we consider two qubits with equal energy gap. Then one can easily see that there can't be any heat engine on this system because the swap would permute state with equal energy. And to put it in the terminology of passive and completely passive, one easily observes that the joint system is passive, but not completely passive. And the reason that it's not completely passive is just that the joint state is not a Gibbs state to any Kelvin temperature, which means that many copies of this pair allow for a heat engine. And this insight is crucial for understanding why heat engines necessarily have a certain complexity if you have equal energy gaps. So we see that qubits with equal energy gaps require more complex gates. And the simplest example is the following. It's phrased in the language of quantum information. With two hot and one cold qubit, such that the hot ones are two times hotter than the cold ones. Then the state 110 is more likely than 001, although its energy is larger. Therefore, the permutation 001 and 110 releases some energy. We also figured out the gate that implements this, or the quantum circuit. And just as a side mark, that if you start with qubits of equal temperature, then the same circuit is a refrigerator. So this also shows how closely connected cooling and heat engines are. And this is a small result about complexity of heat engines. If we go back to say this condition, so we have seen that we need this condition, otherwise we wouldn't have a heat engine on three qubits. But what happens if the temperature differences are smaller? Then we necessarily need more qubits, and this result is about how many qubits we need. So the statement is that small temperature differences require multi-qubit gates, and says that a heat engine with Na hot and Nb cold qubits exists if and only if Na is larger than 1 over Ta over Tb, so the temperature ratio minus 1, and Nb greater or equal Na minus 1. So this figure just shows here, this is for a quite large temperature ratio, at least 2. Here you have a smaller temperature ratio, and here even smaller. So it's just about the increase of complexity. Just to get an intuition about what this means, if you have, for instance, one temperature is 100 degrees Celsius and one temperature is 20 degrees Celsius, then you would need 4 cold and 5 hot qubits. So already remarkable complexity. So we see that heat engines are non-trivial multi-qubit gates, but what's their computational power? I mean, SWAP and the other gates are not too exciting. So I tried to find out some examples that are less trivial. Well, this is maybe worth mentioning. We have a lot of hot and one cold qubits. And here I assume that the hot ones have infinite temperature and the cold one is temperature zero, because that makes things easier. Then one can show that the optimal heat engine maps all words with suffix zero to words with Hamming weight at most 1 n. And this means that the inverse of U computes majority. It just computes whether the majority of the bits are set to 1. And from the theory of circuits, it is known that this gate has at least logical depths that is logarithmic in n. Well, which is not too impressive. Yes? The Hamming weight is the number of ones, right? That's right. Yeah. wait a moment. I first have to think because I didn't recall the proof. I think it's a quite simple argument. Well, it's basically reordering. You have states with probability zero, and you have states. According to these temperatures, infinity and zero, you have all states with suffix zero have equal probability, and all those with suffix one have probability zero. And the states with non-zero probability have to be distributed among all states with the lowest Hamming weights, because these are the low energy states. So the states with the lowest energies are those with Hamming weight at most n. I mean, what the optimal heat engine does is just a reordering of the eigenvalues according to the energy. And the energy is identical to the Hamming weight. Does this answer your question? I mean, it was only a sketch, but if you want to see the details, we can also talk about it later. You're welcome. The question is which hard computational problems can be solved by heat engines? And well, then I was just looking for nice problems or simple problems that are known to be difficult to solve. I found a special instance of knapsack, which is still NP hard. So you have n items with volumes V1 bis Vn, and given a knapsack with volume V and some bound K less or equal than V, and the question is there a subset of items whose total volume is at least K? So that's an well-known problem in operations research, and I found that the optimal heat engine is able to solve this problem. If we take one hot qubit and several cold qubits, then the volume of the knapsack would be the energy gap of the hot qubit. The volumes of the items would be the energy gaps of the cold ones, and the bound K would be the energy of the hot qubit times the temperature ratio. Bad quality now. Then one can show that. Do you hear me? Yeah. Some effects. Oh, okay, I thought it would be feedback side. Then one can show if the answer is yes, the heat engine finds the proof. Well, I didn't want to go to the details, but you can imagine the following, that okay, so one can show the following. The state one tensor 0000 is mapped to the state O tensor, and then comes the solution of this problem. So the if you measure the code qubits with respect to the computational basis, they will show the subset of items that you have to choose. And the argument is a bit more sophisticated, and I still had to recall it today because it's already 6 years old. But if you want to see more details, we can also talk about that later. So, admittedly, this example was a bit artificial, but let's go back to more physical systems. A very physical system, just two harmonic oscillators with different level spacing. And for simplicity, I assumed that the quotient of the energy gaps is irrational, and that the quotient of the energy gaps times the quotient of the temperature gaps is irrational. And both conditions together ensure that the joint density operator and the joint Hamiltonian are non-degenerate. And therefore, the optimal heat engine is a unique permutation of basis states, so a permutation on n0 squared. And by some computer program, we figured out the map on n0 times n0 that corresponds to the optimal heat engine. Well, it's hard to say what this figure really shows. It's only to impress the people that it's quite complex. I hope you don't see a simple structure, otherwise you don't agree that it's complex. But I can't see a simple structure. It's a well, if you play around with it, you'll see that it's a non-trivial reordering problem, which doesn't have a simple rule. Okay, but what do our heat engines show? First, that having different temperatures is necessary for work extraction, so one can derive and feel the second law from first principle. But one can also see that the second law conditions are not sufficient because we have additional constraints for microsystems. By these additional constraints, I mean that you may have a non-equilibrium system that is passive. For instance, this two qubits with energy gaps, where traditional thermodynamics would think, well, you have a hot and a cold reservoir, but nevertheless, you are not able to extract work from it. And then the statement is that more thermodynamic laws for microphysics yet to be discovered. What was missing now? And I hope it's getting closer to the question we had before. How can we use the extracted energy? And this is a simple thoughts experiment where we use the heat for cooling. I called it quantum absorption heat pump. We have a hot reservoir, which is a qubit, a cold reservoir, which is a qubit with a different energy gap, and a target qubit that needs to be cooled. Then one can show that the permutation 010 and 101 reduces the temperature of system 3, so of the target. And this implementation does not require any energy because it acts on a degenerate subspace. So the temperature difference between hot and cold reservoir is used for cooling the target. And playing around with these simple machines inspired a new framework for thermodynamics at the nanoscale that I would like to discuss. Assume the whole world is full of quantum systems with uniform temperature T, except for a few systems that we call resources. And I think that's closer to what you expected, right? And these resources can be hotter or colder than the reference temperature, or be in a non-Gibbs state. Was there a question? And processes can transform resources into other resources. Processes are unitaries that commute with the uncoupled joint Hamiltonian. And to be a bit more formal, was there a question? I will be a little bit more formal later. So we have for this, for cooling by heat differences, we have the resource, which is the hot qubit. We have the environment, and we have the target system. And this swap between 010 and 101 generates a good resource from a hot one. And one can show that perfect cooling of a single qubit requires infinite many copies of the resource. Related to this result that about the quasi order of resources. Did you see the idea? Assume the whole world is full of quantum systems with uniform temperature. Got it. Okay. So here, this is an example what I mean by generating resources from other resources. So here's the... Here's the resource, here's the environment, and here's the resource that we generate from the new, from the old one, using this process. And one can show that even if we have an arbitrarily large environment, perfect cooling of the target system would require infinitely many copies of resource. Remember that all processes that we allow are given by energy conserving unitaries called uncoupled, right? Like this process. I think you don't get population inversion because the probability of 101 is higher than that one of 010. Do you agree? So if you swap that, then you reduce the probability of 1. Right. You're welcome. And one can show within such a framework that perfect erasure of a qubit requires infinitely many resources. If you start with this kind of finite quantum systems as resources, that's what I called tightening Landauer's principle in the work from 2000. I want to be a little bit more formal. The quasi order of resources is given by the following framework. You characterize every system by a pair consisting of a density matrix and the Hamiltonian, and then you define an order relation on these pairs. Roughly speaking, it says, one resource is greater or equal than another one if the latter one can be generated from the former one. And generated from means the following. If there is an environment being in its Gibbs state to the unique reference temperature, and the unitary that commutes with the joint Hamiltonian of the tripartite system, such that application of the unitary to the joint system produces the desired density matrix in the target system. And one can show that restricted to Was there a question? Restricted to diagonal density matrices, this quasi-order can be made explicit by a majorization-like criterion. For reasons of time constraints, I didn't want to go to the details here, but if you like, we can also discuss that. Okay, other questions regarding this quasi or quasi order? Okay, but now the questions that also appeared in the title in a provocative way, are these processes thermodynamically reversible? Of course, formally every unitary U has an inverse U inverse, but the macroscopic controller implementing U or U inverse may consume a lot of work. So, and now I come to more recent work of mine, a problem that bothers me since a while. I would like to understand the thermodynamic limits of quantum control by avoiding external controllers. I will define later what I mean by this. First of all, I should mention work by Linton Popescu and Sritz, sorry, I don't know how to pronounce him. The closed system as heat engine. And this is the idea is the following. You have cold qubit, a hot qubit and an energy sink that absorbs the work. And this energy sink is a multi-level system, which can be considered as a kind of weight that is supposed to be lifted. And all these three systems are coupled, and then they designed a tripartite interaction Hamiltonian that lifts the weight without external energy source or control operations. And while in our framework the unitaries were implemented by external operations, they just provided the Hamiltonian that that performed the engine operations, so to speak. I would say at first glance this is pretty much reversible, because minus H would process. But the question that bothers me is who turns H into minus H? And this is a question that is also related to thermodynamics of computation, and in my opinion, an unsolved question. Actually, we cannot change Hamiltonians. They are just given. And we can only change effective Hamiltonians by changing the states of matter. And regarding the limits of thermodynamic reversibility, the following questions remain. First of all, are there thermodynamic costs of switching from one effective Hamiltonian to another one? Second, all systems are coupled to the environment. Are there thermodynamic costs of effectively isolating them? I don't have an answer, but I propose the following approach to address these questions. And the reason that I sketch this approach is that I would like to advertise it and to inspire others to work on that. I designed the following Hamiltonian or cellular automaton model of quantum control. You can see the details on a preprint on the archive. So we assume that the whole world consists of a lattice of cells, each cell containing a quantum system, and the dynamics of the world is given by a group alpha t. If is integral, then we have cellular automaton. If T is real, then the translation invariant finite Hamiltonian. And then we consider a region R consisting of finitely many cells. Then, depending on the state of the complement of R, the dynamics implements a family of completely positive maps on this region. So, the idea is illustrated here. We have the region here that is supposed to be controlled, and the entire world is a huge cellular automaton. And we want to control the region R just by initializing the complement to an appropriate state. And I called dynamics of the cellular automaton or the Hamiltonian as physically universal if the set of all completely positive maps that can be implemented by possible initializations of the environment is dense in the set of all completely positive trace-preserving maps. And the question that I posed on the archive is, do such cellular automaton or Hamiltonians exist? I don't know. note that physical universality should not be confused with computational universality, because a lot of constructions for Hamiltonians and cellular automaton are known that are computationally universal, in the sense that you have a kind of separation between program and data space, and you can implement any desired transformation on the data space by initializing the program space. But the essential point here in the physically universal CA is that there is no separation between data and program space. You can choose any region and you want to implement whatever you desire on this region by initializing the complement. I don't know whether this is too strong to demand. The reason why I'm interested in this question is that this kind of models provide a model of quantum control where the controller is not external, and where the boundary between system and its controller can be shifted, like the Heisenberg cut for quantum measurement problems, where you can also define what's the measurement apparatus and what's the system. And I think that the energy requirements of an operation or process on the region R can be defined as the required free energy content of the environment that is necessary in order to implement that. And I would be delighted if someone could prove existence or non-existence of physically universal Hamiltonians. Both would have interesting implications for the foundations of physics. I think it's a challenging question. So I'm at the end of my talk now. Thanks very much for your attention. Although this talk was only a game, I think that energy conversion at nanoscale could become even more relevant in the future. I just read about recent progress in storing solar energy via artificial photosynthesis. So I hope that something is developing also in this direction. Thanks.